Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz Today.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Monday. Welcome to Tony Katz Today. As you can probably tell already, this is not Tony Katz, but I am thrilled to be back on this mic. I'm Kira Davis, author of Drawing Lines, Why Conservatives Must Begin to Battle Fiercely in the Arena of Ideas. I'm the host of the Just Listen to Yourself podcast, which is available wherever you find your audio podcasts. And I am a close personal friend of Tony's. So, of course, when he reached out and said, hey, can you do me a solid here, buddy? Of course, I'm always here for Tony, but I'm always here for you guys. He has one of the best audiences in the biz. So happy to be with you guys today. We've got big news popping off this morning. Trump was due in court to present his $475 million bond. We're hopefully to get that delayed. It looks like it has been delayed and reduced. So just to get started right away, I've brought in a good friend of this show and a friend of mine personally to talk about this judgment, this stay, and what it means for Trump going forward. I've got Susie Moore. She's a deputy managing editor of redstate.com, and she's also a fill-in host here on the Tony Katz Show. Susie, welcome to Tony Katz Today.
Hey, Kira. Thanks for having me.
Happy Monday. So we're starting out. I'm not even easing the Tony Katz Today audience into the news cycle this morning. We're just going to, I mean, it was a huge dump this morning. This is a big deal. Trump's judgment has been or at least the bond he has to produce has been reduced, and there's been a stay, am I right, for about 10 days? Explain this to us.
Yeah, you're right. They did the New York Court of Appeals reduce the amount of the bond that he's going to be required to post in order to proceed with his appeal of that civil fraud judgment to, it was $454 or $464 million, and now it's been reduced to $175 million, which is still a lot of money, but probably within his reach. And they also extended the deadline for him posting that bond by 10 days. So that is a big welcome relief, I am sure, for Trump and his legal team, because they were kind of up against the wall trying to figure out how they were going to accumulate the funds in order to secure this bond so they could go forward with the appeal.
Yeah. And what does this mean for Trump? Does this mean he's got some more time to work with? First of all, I have to say this, Susie, I know this isn't necessarily your area of law, although you are a practicer of the law. But it seemed like even that judgment in the beginning was humongous. I've just never seen anything like it. It seemed egregious from the start.
Yeah, I think, obviously there's a partisan element here, and people that are very opposed to Donald Trump probably think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. But from a somewhat objective standpoint, it was an excessive judgment that was entered in a case that you didn't have any complainants. Basically, it was the state saying, we think you fudged your numbers to get these loans and these financial benefits, so we're going to hold you accountable. But there's no one asking for restitution. There's no banks that were saying, hey, we didn't get paid back, or we got the short end of the stick here, or anything like that. So for the judge, Arthur Engoron, to have entered a judgment that called for close to $500 million in fines just seemed really, really extreme. And my sense is that ultimately on appeal, this is a situation where that judgment may be reduced. I don't know that it's going to be reversed outright, but I do think that the amount of the fines is going to be reduced significantly when all is said and done. But in order to get to that point, the courts were at least initially requiring him to basically post the full amount as a bond in order to proceed with the appeal, which just seemed crazy.
There's a lot of stuff that seems crazy about this. First of all, the implications for real estate in New York and across America, if this judgment is allowed to stand as is, because it's basically setting a precedent for a precedent against what is a very common practice in real estate. And that involves the valuation of your properties so you can attain loans. And it's all very above board. And it's what business owners and contractors and builders have been doing forever. And so it has this, it is strange, to say the least. But I want to say something to you, Susie, and I want you to respond. It's not necessarily a question, but it's a statement. I've been thinking a lot about Letitia James, who's the New York AG who brought this case to much fanfare, and she's going to be dining out on this prosecution for a very long time. And I'm also thinking about Fannie Willis in Georgia. And I'm looking at these two women who are pushed front and center to these prosecutions. And to me, it feels like this is a huge setup, because these cases are very weak. Trump has already said, I'll take this to the Supreme Court if I have to. And my limited knowledge of the law tells me that he's very likely to win a Supreme Court case if the court chooses to hear it. So it seems to me like these are weak cases, and yet the Democrat parties and the Democrat apparatus have pushed these women out front. I feel like they're being set up to fail. I feel like this is a setup so they can point to these people and say, oh, hey, we gave them the keys to the kingdom and they just messed up. It feels like they're just throwing things at the wall and seeing what will stick.
Well, I think you're right on that. I think there definitely is an element of throwing things at the wall, because, you know, you have to remember the first criminal case that was brought against him was by Alvin Bragg. And he's actually in court on that this morning while they're trying to figure out what the new trial date is going to be on that one. That's the New York hush money case. And even that one, after, you know, the kind of furor over him being indicted, people looked at the indictment and said, this is really thin. So you've got several of these cases where I think it's not unfair to say they wouldn't have been brought if it weren't Donald Trump that was the potential defendant. They seem to basically be designed to just try and get him in any way, which way they can. The stronger cases are the ones that were brought by Jack Smith. But all of them have their, you know, their problems. As far as setting up the people bringing them, it could be kind of a twofold thing. Part of it has to do with where they're being brought. In other words, you know, the alleged crimes took place in those jurisdictions, and those are the people that happen to be the top, you know, prosecutors in those jurisdictions. But I also think that there probably was some strategy here, because if you put out front and center a woman or a minority prosecutor, and things get kind of ugly in the back and forth over it, you can always also say, oh, this is being done because of racism or because of sexism, or, you know, this person is being criticized because of those things and not because they're bringing a flawed case.
Absolutely. And I want to apologize to listeners. Suddenly some workers have appeared outside of the studio, so there is some construction work going outside of the studio right now. We'll try to push through. But yeah, absolutely. It does feel like sort of hedging their bets. Now, mm-hmm. It seems to me like, Susie, maybe you can speak to this, all of this is a matter of timing. If Trump can just continue to push things down the road, then he can get to the elections, and he's got, and if he's elected, which is looking, at least statistically speaking, it's looking good for him. If he can get elected, then he can use his presidential authority to make some of these charges go away, or maybe just, you know, let them go on throughout the years of his presidency. He can get another four, no matter what happens. So maybe he just let Bragg sit out through his 4 years and does whatever he's planning on doing in office. Is this a matter of timing more so than money?
It's both. It's both, but the timing is key here because of the fact that the election is looming, and any opportunity Trump's legal team has to run out the clock and push things till after the election is a benefit to him, whether it means that he can pardon himself on the federal charges or just from a practical standpoint, it doesn't make sense to proceed. Because obviously one of the main reasons these cases are being brought is not to exact justice, but is to prevent his successful candidacy. So if he wins, then that kind of moots it. doesn't mean that they'll just go away, but it kind of takes the sting out of it. I don't think that he's going to be able to successfully push all of them back past November. The one that he's in court on this morning, the New York hush money case, that was the first one brought. And I think the judge is looking at maybe delaying the trial through, you know, till like late April at this point. That doesn't mean something else won't arise and push it back further, but it's already been pushed back once and potentially twice now. So that one could very well go forward, but that's a state court case. So it's not one that he can necessarily pardon himself for. But it also is not necessarily the strongest case. And, you know, their key witness, their star witness is Michael Cohen, who's got the credibility of a, I don't even know what. So that one could go. I don't think you're going to see the Georgia case go just because of all the developments in that one and all the drama surrounding it. I think it's possible one of Jack Smith's cases could go before November. And that's probably where the real danger lies as far as something that could, could result in a conviction and possible hamstringing, a successful candidacy for Trump.
All right. Well, Susie, tell everybody how they can find out more about this case and about other things that you're reporting on over at Red State and where they can look you up online.
Absolutely. You can just go to redstate.com and our front page has got all the latest news on it. You can look at my author page. I cover a lot of the legal news that we cover at Red State. Or you can find me on Twitter at SmoothieQ, SmoosieQ.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us, Susie. We'll catch up with you later. We're going to go to a break right now, but don't go anywhere. I'm Kira Davis filling in for Tony Katz, and you're listening to Tony Katz Today. Welcome back, everybody, to Tony Katz Today. I am your host, Kira Davis, host of Just Listen to Yourself, a podcast available wherever you find your audio podcasts. Matter of fact, while you're just sitting there in your car or in your office, why don't you head over to your favorite podcast platform, look up my podcast, Just Listen for Yourself, Just Listen to Yourself. Hit subscribe and go ahead and download hours and hours of critical thinking content, because we need more critical thinking in this country. I just spoke to Susie Moore, deputy managing editor of redstate.com. She's also a fill-in host here at the Tony Katz show at Tony Katz Today. And we were talking about the Trump indictments and pushing these bonds forward. His bond has been reduced to $175 million, and he's got at least a 10-day stay on paying that. So we'll see how all this shakes out. But the news this morning and this afternoon is absolutely chock full of Trump stuff, Trump mania, Trump everything. And as Susie laid out, we're journalists and we try to be objective. Now, I'm not an objective journalist. I'm an opinion journalist. That means people pay me to tell them what I think and pop culture. I'm definitely a right winger. I am definitely a conservative. And so everything I do try my best to look at the news as objectively as possible. And looking at this Trump as objectively as possible, I can honestly say that a lot of this does feel egregious. And I think America agrees. I really do. Let me know what you think. You can call into the show today, 317-239-9393, 317-239-9393, if you agree with me or disagree. The problem with having a rational discussion about this is Trump himself, right? He's become a meme. He has become someone who people are always making fun of. And he's so easy to ridicule. And then he gets on Truth Social and he writes in all caps, talks about how I'm being persecuted. But also the way that Trump talks and sounds on a regular basis, it also makes it sound like he has a persecution complex. Part of that is the mainstream media's fault. You have to understand that this is how they set things up. And you can take this example and apply it to all of our political discussion these days. I firmly place this at the feet of social media culture. But this is what they do. This is actually a concerted strategy. It's laid out in Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. It's right out of the Marxist handbook. You make people with complaints seem ridiculous. That's why I'm all in favor of conservatives and right-wingers using humor, like look at the Babylon Bee. Using humor and ridicule and shame to combat bad ideas. That's what the left does. That's what progressives do. They set people up as caricatures, and then they tear them down with ridicule and shame. So that when they do say things that are making sense, people go, "Oh, it doesn't matter. That person's crazy." Look at ivermectin. Let's take the ivermectin discussion. Do you remember? I'm going to take y'all way back to 2020, and COVID was in, we were in the throes of COVID and we were being censored and information was being banned. And the only way to stop COVID was to stop contact with all other people outside of your own home and to take the vaccine when it was available, not doing any other medication. So Trump mentions ivermectin and suddenly it's just a horse medication. But it's a viable medication, right? It's being used to this day. It's being prescribed by doctors to this day, not only for COVID, which it is being prescribed for, but other things. But because we had made, or the mainstream media had made Trump into a caricature, it was easy then for them to say, "Oh, look how ridiculous this man is. He wants you to take horse medication," when he didn't say that at all. And they did the same thing to Joe Rogan. So they set up legitimate people with legitimate ideas for ridicule. And then when they do espouse legitimate ideas, they could just point and laugh and say, "Oh, they're just so crazy." I think we've got a phone call. Let's go to the callers. We've got Jeff on the line. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to Tony Katz Today. Happy Monday.
Hey, happy Monday to you. Kira, I love when you take over for Tony sometimes. I just love you so much, and I agree with most of your politics.
Oh, thank you so much.
No, you're fine. And I wanted to say, as a lifelong Republican, I'll say lifelong conservative, I'm 63 years old. I would like to see somebody at least tell me what some kind of a plan is for the future for my kids and my grandkids and my great grandkids. I mean, that's the whole thing. It's like a TV show that we're watching, and it's throwing mud and everything else. I mean, I still can't get any ideas for the future of my children or you or I. And I don't know if you can relate to that, or go ahead and tell me what your feelings.
Yeah. Thank you for that call, Jeff. Brilliant. That's a brilliant question. It's sad that it's a brilliant question. It's one that needs to be asked. You're absolutely right. I'm going to tell you why you haven't heard a plan. Because most of the people at the top of both these parties, most of the people that live inside the Beltway, most of the people that live in your area, wherever you live, who are at the top of the political game, and they live in their fancy houses and their kids go to private school, they are shielded from the results of their policy and their policy pursuits. Nothing's going to happen to them. They have enough money to live above the fray. They have enough connections, enough influence. The consequences of what's going on around us don't touch those people. They don't need a plan. They just need your vote. So everything is tailored to getting your vote. And both sides of the political spectrum are guilty of this. I'm not sure how you even solve it, given the nature of politics and the government in the first place. But you're absolutely right. It's not an accident that you're not hearing a plan. They don't have a plan. Half hour, I'm going to play some comments from Ronna McDaniel. Now she's hired on at NBC, and you're going to hear her talk, and we're going to talk more about the question that you asked, Jeff. When you hear her talk, you're going to hear that she's talking about a plan that never was, that never will be, and it is vague in every sense of the word. And when you hear her talking more freely, you realize, oh yeah, it's no wonder the Republican Party is disarray, because they're rotten from top to bottom. That's another one of the topics I want to discuss on the show today. Just this rot that we're experiencing everywhere. And it's seeping to the top. It's not just DEI. It's not just CRT. It's not just the border. It's not just crime. It's all of these things combined. And each one is another example, so poor and so powerless, you will want the government to step in to do everything for you. And that's why we have to do everything to prevent that. Don't go anywhere. We've got lots more to talk about. Thanks for that call, Jeff. I'm Kira Davis, filling in for Tony Katz, and you're listening to Tony Katz Today. Welcome back to Tony Katz Today. I am your fill-in host, Kira Davis, author of Drawing Lines, which is available wherever you find your books. You can go to Amazon, or if you don't want to support a giant, you can go to faithfultext.com. Faithfultext.com. That's my publisher's direct site. And I think you'll even get a little bit of a discount there. But yeah, that is my publishing company. Happens to be owned by Colonel Oliver North, who has been a great support to my writing career. So go do that. Follow me on Twitter at @RealKiraDavis if you want to hear more from me. We've been talking this morning about Trump's indictments, pushing them down the road. We had a great call at the end of the first half hour from Jeff about, you know, look, what's the plan here? Before we move forward, though, because I do want to talk about Ronna McDaniel, we do have another call. So I'm sorry, caller, I did not get your name. Mike, thank you. Mike, welcome to Tony Katz Today. I'm Kira. What's on your mind? Let me know.
Hi, Kira. I keep hearing one of the main defenses of Donald Trump's behavior is nobody got hurt, so no harm, no foul, and just throw it away, right? So if I jump the fence at the White House and just walk along it and jump back over, they can't arrest me then, right? No harm, no foul. This is what you're saying. Or I'm speeding down the road and they catch me. Nobody got hurt. No harm, no foul. So how is that any different?
So here's the thing. My first question to you is what are you talking about? Trump's been indicted on fraud, and that is what we're talking about today. So
right.
Please explain your argument in terms of the fraud. Are you familiar with the details of this fraud case?
Yeah.
It's not a question of, there is no other party in this indictment. There's no person. There's not even a bank. It's just Trump. The idea is that Trump was valuing his properties higher than what they were worth, which he was claiming, I was not doing that. I'm just setting a valuation of my property so I can go apply for loans. So there literally were no other people involved in this. So who is hurt? And he doesn't seem to have broken any laws.
If I'm speeding on the highway, nobody got hurt, why do I get a ticket?
Because there's a law against speeding.
There's a law against overvaluing your property too.
There's not in real estate. And he wasn't overvaluing the property. But that being said, he was convicted. And so this is, now we're dealing with the prosecution of this case. So you're absolutely right about that. But I don't think anybody's saying that, oh, there's not a problem because no one was hurt. What we're saying is the whole prosecution seems kind of flimsy. You disagree?
Oh, yeah, I do. He broke the law. He should be punished just like anybody else that breaks the law.
What law did he break?
The law.
Right. I think this is what happens, Mike, when we get our news from headlines instead of actually digging in. Thanks for your call, Mike. I really appreciate that. Look, I get it, Mike. I hear you. And I hear everybody out there, because we're just dealing in memes now. No one's actually digging into what's going on here. Let's take Trump out of this. Let's just forget that it's Trump in the first place. What is going on is extremely dangerous, because this prosecution now sets a precedent for loans, period. He did the thing that you do when you ask a bank to provide a loan. You tell them the valuation of your properties. And you say, well, this is what it's valued at. I need this much more to complete my project. So, but fair is fair. Okay, fine. The New York justice system found that Trump broke laws. But it is true that there's no other person involved. He didn't take money from anybody. He didn't steal money from anybody. He did not get money from anybody. This is just, it's a paperwork case. And given what we're seeing happen in the Beltway at an executive level, we see Biden's involvement with China. We see his son involved in backroom deals. We see there's cocaine in the White House. You know, there's charges of sexual misconduct on the House floor. There's all of these crazy things going on in this administration right now, and no one's being held accountable for it. And no one's being held accountable for it. So we're prosecuting this when America is falling apart, when people are having to choose between paying the gas bill or paying for gas in their car and putting food on the table, when people are having to watch illegal aliens just stream across our border, overwhelm our defense forces, and just burst into our country, and then overwhelm the resources that we have to offer people. We're seeing that happen on a daily basis, and we're feeling that every day. And this is what we're being asked to worry about. A billionaire in New York who asked for a loan. It just seems egregious given the other issues that are going on in this country. And that's why it feels political. That's why it feels like a political prosecution. You would never see this for anybody else. I'm fine with what if people want to prosecute Trump, okay, fine. But let's not pretend that this isn't political in nature. And you can agree with the New York AG's charges and with what they did. You can agree with that. And you can say, I don't see anything wrong with that. That's fine. But I do take issue with Mike's framing of this as like Trump hurt people. When people say no one was hurt, we're not saying, what's the big deal? No one got hurt. Who cares? That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is there's really no crime against anyone here. There was no crime to be prosecuted. It felt like something that they pulled out of whole cloth. I believe they did. Regardless, the judgment is there, but Trump has vowed to appeal, and he's vowed to take it all the way to the Supreme Court if necessary. But this is a larger issue, and we're seeing how this is affecting the rest of the Republican Party. So it seems like there's this big shuffle going on in big parties, in both parties, excuse me. One of the biggest shuffles is we've seen Ronna McDaniels get pushed off to the side, finally. Here's what I want you to know about Ronna, because I know a lot of you out there in Tony's audience are probably glad that she's gone. She feels like an elitist. She feels like the establishment. Here's what you need to know about Ronna and the job that she did at the RNC. Her job is voter turnout and fundraising. It's not setting the party politics. It's not setting the tone for the party. And it's not necessarily messaging, although messaging is a part of every political platform. And she was horrible at it, obviously. But you have to understand what her job was. And that's the job she was doing, but she wasn't doing it well. Because at the end of the day, if your goal is to increase voter turnout, and to increase voter confidence, I don't care how many studies or polls she wants to spew on national television when she goes out. Those of us who are out here on the ground, right, we were talking to Jeff last half hour about those of us who experience the real world results of policies. Those of us who are on the ground, our votes are depressed. Our votes are suppressed. We do not feel like the Republican Party is coming out, guns blazing, getting everybody, excuse me, that was just a figure of speech, everybody, guns blazing. We don't feel like there's a sense of urgency from the Republican Party, but we feel a sense of urgency here on the ground every single day. I'm here in California. I live in the southern part of the state, la-la land, as it were. And we just had an election. We had our primary election cycle. Voter turnout was 22%. I live in a red county, or what used to be a red county, Orange County. We flipped blue in 2022. But I still a very conservative county. Only 22% in this county, voter turnout. Why is that? We have enough registered Republicans to win elections here. We don't feel like our votes matter. And in a way, in California, they don't. Especially not when you're voting for president. But it takes us a month. We're still counting ballots, everybody. We had this election 2 weeks ago. We're still counting ballots. We're going to count ballots for the next 2 weeks. I ran for school board in 2022. I did not know if I won or lost that race for 31 days. We're basically all mail-in ballots now, which the Republican Party is way behind on that. We should have sued. We should have been suing against that a long time ago. And when we weren't going to sue, we should have embraced ballot harvesting. We're only just doing that now. Democrats are 12 years ahead of us on that. But here it takes 30 plus days to count ballots. So what happens? A lot of people just feel like that's corrupt. The government can do anything. They can do anything in that time. And what happened recently, we passed a proposition in this last election cycle, Prop 1. It is yet another proposition to tackle the homelessness crisis here in California. I'm sure I don't have to explain to you the mess. I mean, we're just national news every day. The mess that's going on in all of our major cities and really everywhere, even in the quiet suburbs, this stuff has crept in. So we've got another ballot measure. We have to vote on new taxes in this state. And it was called Prop 1, $7 billion for the homeless industry. And yes, my friends, it is an industry. You want to know why California's homeless problem is so bad? I've got a great episode of my show on it. Just listen to yourself with Kira Davis. It's called Why is California's Homeless Crisis So Bad? And I explain a lot of this stuff. But one of the reasons why it's so bad is we have a homeless industry and people, it just perpetuates itself. We pass a tax, more people get paid. It doesn't help to solve the problem. You can't keep getting paid if you solve the problem. $7 billion new dollars to solve the homeless crisis, to put up new mental health facilities, hire more social workers, and I don't know, build more housing, which is absolutely ridiculous. That proposition was on trend to lose 2 weeks ago. Voting day, it was behind, but if you understand the trends in California voting and how long it takes to get these ballot dumps in, it was trending to win. It was the fact that it was even close tells you that California voters don't want it, because we rarely meet a new tax we won't vote for overwhelmingly. But the fact that it was even close tells you Californians don't want it. We figured, okay, once this 30-day process is up, this ballot measure is going down. Nope, it passed. Somehow Governor Newsom found some more votes, some more mail-in votes we didn't know were out there. Some new ones came in, the measure passed. That's depressing. It makes you not want to go to the polls and vote. So the RNC has a bigger problem than Donald Trump. And as a matter of fact, if they want to hearten voters, I think they really need to get in this game of defending Donald Trump. I really do. I know there's a lot of people out there who feel like RNCs shouldn't be using their money to defend Donald Trump, but Donald Trump's prosecution is bigger than him. It also will affect voter turnout. And if there's anything that's been working for voter turnout on the Republican side, whether you love it or hate it, it's Donald Trump. Whether you love it or hate it, he's exciting the voters. And he is motivating voters. And that's what the Republican Party needs to do. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll hear a couple of clips from Rana, and I'll explain exactly how that rot in the RNC is top down. I'm Kira Davis, filling in for Tony Katz. You're listening to Tony Katz Today. Welcome back, everybody, to Tony Katz Today. I'm your guest host, Kira Davis. You can sign up for my Substack at justkiradavis.substack.com. Lots of stuff going on over there. I started a new series actually called Messages to My Children. And I just decided I wanted a place to write messages to them in the future. I'm thinking about how the legacies we leave and the words that we leave. I don't have a lot of stuff to leave to my kids. So I've decided I'm going to start putting, you know, my advice and things I've learned and things I want them to think about as they age in a series. So I started that series over there. My first article on it is about finding a mate, finding a good and godly mate. That's someone who shares your values, because marriage is hard and you're going to need somebody who's in the fight and totally committed. And speaking of being totally committed and in the fight, Rhonda McDaniels is out of the fight for the RNC, and she's now in at NBC. Surprise, surprise. Right? A Beltway queen getting a Beltway, another Beltway job in the Beltway media. NBC people aren't that happy about it for a lot of reasons. One of the reasons we were talking about earlier, how there's been this very effective push to completely demonize any point of view that isn't directly on the left, left of center even. And you've heard a lot of liberal media personalities saying that lately. Hey, I'm liberal, but... the party seems to have left me. This progressive movement seems to have left me. Now we all look like right wingers. So Ronna was on NBC over the weekend, and she was questioned. She was questioned about her new job and about what she brings to NBC. She was on with Kristen Welker on Meet the Press, and she said this. And this is a perfect example of why the RNC has not been effective. It really is a leadership problem. Everything is a leadership problem at the end of the day. Again, I'm not a Trumper, I'm really not, but I'm just an observer, and I'm observing the phenomenon of Trump. And he is a very strong leader. I mean, he's been a strong business leader, and that's why he's been so successful. And for people who don't really like him or feel uneasy about the cultiness maybe that sometimes he engenders, you have to understand that that's what happens when you've been the victim of weak leaders. That's why it's really important to elect strong and healthy and vibrant leaders who aren't too crazy, right? Who are sane and who enact sane policies, because weak leadership leads to weak politics. And we are pushing up against a break here, so I'm probably not going to play this clip, play the clip I had of her. But this is, have it both ways. You can't split the difference. You either got to be a strong leader or a strong media personality. But you can't always be both. And it's clear from this interview, we'll talk about it in the next segment since I'm running out of time here, but it's clear from this interview with Kristen Welker that Ronna is now moving into the next planned segment of her career, which is media personality. What we need is politicians, dedicated politicians who understand politics, and we are being infected by media prostitutes, for a lack of a better term. I'll clear that up when we come back after the break. I'm Kira Davis. I'm filling in for Tony Katz, and you're listening to Tony Katz Today.